Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again.
Unbelievable.
Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake.
A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's facts. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe it myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
Welcome back to this week's episode of the Last Round Podcast. Thank you again for joining us. Jumping straight back into it, fight reviews this past Friday, the 8th of March, from the Kingdom Arena in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, on DAZN pay-per-view. It was DAZN pay-per-view over here in the United States too, right? Not just like the UK and everything else?
Yeah, I think it was something like $29.99. If you have a subscription, and then maybe $39.99 if you don't subscribe to DAZN.
Okay, so it was pay-per-view here in the United States as well. Anthony Joshua gets the 28th win of his professional career with a second-round knockout. Early night for Anthony Joshua over former UFC heavyweight champion Francis Ngannou, this was his second professional fight. I think we can safely say Ngannou's fought in back-to-back fights in his first two professional fights in boxing. He's fought the two biggest moneymakers in the heavyweight division, you know, and definitely the two biggest, definitely the top 10 for sure, top five, top seven moneymakers in the whole sport in Tyson Fury and Anthony Joshua. I know we talked about it last week. I was also on the Coast to Coast Combat Hour with Ed Carbajal and his co-host Matt, and I helped them talk about the fight since there was an MMA fighter in Francis Ngannou against Anthony Joshua. And I think I said on there that, you know, if Anthony Joshua doesn't win, he sucks. You know, well, I mean, what else could you say? You know, like, and he made it. I mean, I think he did what he had to do. You know, he knocked him out. He knocked him down like once, I think, before the final stoppage and the final knockout. But that final knockout was brutal, man. That straight missile shot down the middle that Anthony Joshua's good at, just throwing with that feint to the lower body and then straight over the top. Boom. Lights out for Francis Ngannou. What'd you think about the fight?
Yeah, like you said, I think, you know, we all thought, you know, being big boxing fans, that, you know, that's really what should happen when someone comes from a different sphere. You know, I think we all looked at it that, you know, Ngannou might have a chance. Look how good he did against Fury. You know, he managed to drop Fury. You know, he's never been knocked out. And then, you know, reports that Tyson Fury was going around saying that he hit him, you know, two or three times, you know, with flush shots, and they just kind of like bounced off Ngannou. So we're like, what, man, this guy's a monster. You know, is AJ going to be able to knock him out? But, you know, he just showed early on, you know, that, you know, Ngannou was kind of like biting at all of the feints. You could see, you know, every time he kind of like threw something, he left himself, you know, very, very wide. And AJ was just setting stuff up, you know, going to the body, kind of seeing what Ngannou did. Like, if he threw a jab, like, how did he do it? If he went to the body, did he, you know, you could see he would like do that MMA thing where he would pat down. Instead of like using his elbow or something to block it, he would pat away the jab, which obviously left him open for the big right hand, which is pretty much what AJ did, you know, in the final round when he got the first knockdown. And then he just came over and obviously just unleashed a monstrous right hand to finish it off, because, you know, Ngannou was still stunned and he was still suffering from the, you know, the previous knockdown and the knockdown probably in the first round as well.
Three knockdowns in total, right? Including the finish.
Yeah, including the finish. Yeah, one, you know, good straight right in the first, which kind of stunned Ngannou and like dropped him. And then obviously two in the second round. And it's good to see AJ back to form. You know,
is it back to form, or is that, I mean, can we really, I mean,
okay, he's done what he should have done against the opponents. Like, if you look at obviously this fight, you know, he should have really put away someone like Ngannou, because he's not a boxer. You know, AJ was an Olympic gold medalist, you know, and obviously he'd been two-time world champion. And then, you know, when he first, Otto Wallin, like we said before, I think, you know, he knew him so well. He was literally AJ's sparring partner. So he should really put away his sparring partner. He's paying him to come in to help him. So, you know, essentially he's obviously a better fighter than he is if he's using him for sparring. And then, you know, if you look when he fought Robert Hellenius, Hellenius had just fought, wasn't the original opponent. The opponent should have been, you know, Dillian White. And he kind of took a few rounds when he fought Hellenius, but eventually got him out of there. And then I think we probably all thought the performance against Franklin was kind of flat. You know, he went, was it the whole 10 rounds with Franklin, and he didn't look too great. But I think maybe moving to Ben Davidson so far seems to be, you know, a good matchup, because AJ, when you listen to him in interviews, he's very, you know, he always asks questions. And I think when he's with someone like, you know, Ben Davidson, who uses a lot of tape, you know, Ben Davidson could say like, hey, I want you to do this in the fight. AJ just being quite inquisitive like he is, will be like, why do you want me to do that? And then Ben Davidson can kind of like give him some tape, kind of like a quarterback, you know, taking home some footage in the NFL and like looking like, okay, these are the plays. And that's essentially what kind of Ben Davidson does. And I think that kind of fits the way that AJ kind of learns. And he's very, you know, asks a lot of questions and wants to know why. Whereas with some maybe like old school coaches, they may be like, well, why do I do that? And he's like, because I said, you know, very right. Old school, very kind of like student teacher type of thing. So I think so far it looks to be a good match, but I think we'd probably be able to tell, you know, when he fights, say, if he gets the Fury fight next, or he fights like Filip Hrgović, or, you know, if Usyk wins, he fights Usyk again and then, you know, does better than he does in the first two fights. So I think so far, so good. He's doing what he should do. But I think there's still sort of a few fights to go before we can really say, you know, okay, like Ben Davidson's the perfect match. And that's really what he's been missing. And that's why he's gone from Rob McCracken to, you know, Robert Garcia. And then he went to, you know, Derek James for a small period of time. And he looks to be more settled at the minute, I would say, with Ben Davidson.
Yeah, he's I forgot he was with Derek James for a little bit. That was just kind of like a blip in his career trajectory there. But he got the knockdown, or actually the official time of the knockout, I'm sorry, the finish was at 2 minutes and 38 seconds of round two. And I think you mentioned it, but Ngannou, you know, he switched to southpaw stance, and that's when he was dropped. You know, he was switching stances, and, you know, like that, I think we know there's a high percentage of failure when a fighter does that. There's not too many who could do that. Like Terence Crawford might be decent at it, but even then, like, he doesn't do it that much, because there's been times where he's, I think, switched and he's gotten caught with some shots, you know, and he realizes like, oh, okay, I gotta figure it out. But yeah, I'm not sure. Maybe Ngannou and his team felt like, oh, this will kind of throw AJ off his game. Like, oh, what is he doing? He's switching on me. You know, maybe it's like a mind game. I mean, I don't know what else you could call it, right? You know, like, it's a physical advantage if you're semi proficient at fighting from that angle. But it's also a mind game, especially if you do it during the actual fight and your opponent's like, what the heck? Like, oh, I didn't fight any southpaws in sparring. Why is he switching southpaw on me? You know, so I don't know. Maybe it was that. He's like, okay, well, Joshua's already a way better boxer than me, but, you know, maybe I'll use this to see if it works. But obviously it didn't. But did Ngannou really lose making that much money? I mean, he's made what? Probably close to 50 million, maybe less, a little less than 50 million. If you kind of average it out between Tyson Fury and the Anthony Joshua fight this past weekend, is he really a loser?
No. If you look at it like that, because he's come over to a sport that he's, you know, he was never professional in, right? He's just come out of nowhere and decided to take up boxing. You know, he got out of the Fury fight, didn't get dropped, I assume, didn't come out with, you know, too much damage. And then obviously he fights Anthony Joshua. He obviously was knocked out, you know, was out for a period of time. He ended up going to the press conference and stuff like that. So, you know, fingers crossed, everything's good. So no, in terms of that, he's made $50 million. You know, his family and, you know, probably, you know, his kids and hopefully his kids' kids and kids' kids, you know, hopefully they're all set with that amount of money. If he gets in there and pretty much robs the bank, right? Robs the Fury bank, robs the AJ bank and runs off, you know, with $50 million. And there's still rumors that, because, you know, Ngannou's not technically brilliant, but he's an amazing puncher, right? Deontay Wilder is not technically brilliant, but he's also got that. And then obviously, you know, Wilder's supposedly the biggest puncher in boxing. Ngannou's the biggest puncher in the UFC, if you go by that machine that they use.
So you're betting, what would you say the percentage chance is that Ngannou Wilder happens before the end of this year? Because you're right, Wilder's coming off a loss, and it was a loss that people, he was the favorite to win and he lost, which we'll get to that to Joseph Parker in a second. But, you know, Wilder's coming off a loss after returning to the ring after, you know, X amount of years. And Ngannou's 0-2, you know, so it's like, oh, they both lost. So you can use that maybe in marketing. That kind of makes sense, right?
Yeah. You can sell it, you know. You know, they're both losses, they're both returning, trying to get it into the win column. Biggest puncher in boxing, biggest puncher in MMA. You know, it's one of those ones where it's literally like blink and you miss it, you know. Another 10, 20 million, something like that in the back pocket for Ngannou. He walks away maybe 0-3 from professional boxing, but with 70 million, maybe more.
Yeah. No, it's not bad at all.
You can't go wrong, right? You can't.
Look at it this way. And this is kind of a fun fact. I don't know if I would call it a fact because it's more of a question to we would have to do research on. But I do wonder who, like, in their first two fights, because these are sanctioned as professional fights, even though Ngannou obviously was an MMA heavyweight champion, you know, one of the best in the world. But technically, him coming over in his first two professional boxing fights, making, you know, let's just say $50 million, or maybe a little less, but let's just average it out to 50. What other fighter in history is starting their career out in their first two fights? I mean, I would think that's a record, no?
Making that much money, that's what the question is?
Yeah, making that much money.
The only people that would be anywhere near close would be the Jake Paul, Logan Paul.
Well, that's what I was thinking too. But even then, I don't think they made that kind of money.
Because the first one they did on like pay-per-view, right? And like, I'm sure, I think they just tried to run it themselves in England.
I think so, yeah.
Paul and KSI, and they did like YouTube. And then I think Matt Troom helped out on the second and third show.
On DAZN, I think.
And because I went to the one in LA,
Staples Center.
Yeah, I would say those guys are the ones who are.
Yeah, I think they're the only ones who could be close to that. But even then, like, I don't think they made that as much money as Ngannou has in these first two fights.
No, probably not. Not
I think Ngannou is probably in the history books in terms of money. You know, it's like turning pro. You know, from a technical standpoint, making averaging probably $50 million for those first two fights.
Like you didn't even know draft.
Yeah, that's insane.
Picked number one.
That's insane, man. That is insane. But yeah, I think you're right. I think Ngannou Wilder, I'm sure Saudi Arabia and DAZN are going to explore that. Like, oh, why not? And Wilder will probably do it. He's like, oh, I would love this comeback fight. This guy's not even an actual boxer. He's an MMA guy. I should beat this guy and I'm going to get paid $30 million. So yeah, I could totally see that. I do wonder about Francis Ngannou if he's, cause he did sign that deal with like the Professional Fighters League, PFL, which is the other MMA company. And he hasn't fought for them yet. So I do wonder how much, I'm assuming he has a lot of leverage in that contract with them because he was a heavyweight champion of the world for the UFC and he left, and the PFL is obviously a smaller promotion. So I would think if they really wanted to sign him, they had to kind of give him what he wants. And he probably says like, hey, if I have a boxing fight, I have the option to take that and you guys have to wait. I'm assuming that's it, you know? So is he ever going to fight in MMA again?
Probably not.
I mean, safe bet, right?
All that money. If he does, it'll be like a like a gimme fight just to kind of fulfill the contract. Because they did a tournament recently where someone he was supposed to fight, a Brazilian, huge dude, was like 6'8" or something. He's absolutely enormous. And he won. And then they kind of announced, like, hey, he's going to be fighting Ngannou. Ngannou was in the crowd. He just walked off. There was no face-off.
That's
no
ridiculous.
Interview. Looked like he just didn't want to be, like, either he hadn't been told, like, hey, if he wins, you're fighting him.
Yeah, maybe.
There was no showdown. There was no selling of it, which made me think, like, okay, I don't think Ngannou's down for this. So
Yeah. And, like, I mean, knowing that, like I said, what I said earlier, it makes you kind of speculate that he has all the leverage in that contract with the PFL.
And he's had a taste of boxing money.
Yeah.
Versus, he's not getting this
type of purses. Probably has the last power in the decision. Like, he says, like, okay, well, you know, I have to say yes. You know, if I have another opportunity, especially in boxing, I'm going to take that takes precedent before, you know, I could see that. And the, you know, what is the PFL going to do? You know, like, oh, well, okay. You know, cause they want to be able to at least have a guy like him with his stature and what he brings to the table in terms of eyeballs to fight on their card to try to even semi compete with the UFC, which obviously they won't, but they might build some type of publicity off of it. So, yeah. And then AJ, I mean, regardless of him fighting Ngannou, you know, activity matters. And AJ is one of those high level boxers who's been active essentially for his whole career. You know, I think I saw a stat that in the last, I don't know how many years, maybe last 4 years or maybe less or maybe a little bit more, but maybe 4 years. Joshua's 9-0 ever since losing. I don't know if it's 9-0, but ever since he lost to Usyk, I think that was his last loss, right?
Usyk, and then he fought Franklin, Hellenius, Wallin, Ngannou.
So 4-0 since that loss to Usyk. I mean,
I think it's four in the last year.
Oh, he's fought four times the last year?
I think it's four times in around a year.
I mean, you got to give it to him, man. Like, people always say, like, you know, like, oh, these guys, like, they don't fight. Like, Joshua's arguably number two in terms of moneymaker behind Canelo Alvarez, and he stays active. You know, what's the common denominator with a lot, like, him and Canelo Alvarez? They stay active. They go out there. You know, whether they win or lose, they keep, you know, they keep fighting on a consistent level. So, and AJ, you know, he's obviously going to be in the crowd for the Usyk Tyson Fury fight in June, right? You know, kind of build us some publicity there. And then whoever wins that fight, you know, if it's Fury, let me ask you this. If Fury beats Usyk in June, assuming there's no rematch clause in the thing, which there might be, I think that there probably is. Does AJ and Fury, do they fight in the UK or do they take this fight to Saudi Arabia?
Well, the Fury Usyk fight has a rematch clause. So from what everyone's saying is all the belts for the undisputed will be on the line as soon as that fight finishes. And if they do activate the rematch clause, the IBF belt will become vacant. And Anthony Joshua will probably fight Filip Hrgović for the vacant IBF heavyweight title. But yeah, the second part of that question, in Saudi Arabia, this is too much money.
Yeah. But I mean, like, just imagine that, though. Like, I mean, obviously they're going to make a ton of money, and then that's probably going to be the highest grossing fight in terms of fighter purses out there. Like, for all the events that they've done so far in Saudi Arabia, that's definitely going to be the highest purses for each respective fighter. But, like, just imagine, like, all those people in the UK, England, you know, because these guys could sell out Wembley Stadium and all those big stadiums, you know, and they'll still make a ton of money, but they'll obviously make significantly more in Saudi Arabia. So it takes away, you know, from the spectacle. Especially since the Saudi Arabian, like, the crowd over there isn't really you know, I feel like the crowds at these shows over there are
non-existent.
A lot of them are, they're wealthy people, you know? So it's like the energy is not really there, but they're going to, they have the pockets to make the fights, but it just sucks. Cause it's like, man, imagine a Fury Joshua fight in one of those big soccer football stadiums in the UK, you know, it's kind of like an AJ Klitschko.
I think the only way you'd get that is if we get either like two or three fights and then they kind of take all the money for the first one. And then they're both, you know, maybe they're like, you know what? We really need to do the second or third fight in the UK because, you know, the atmosphere, like you say, the entrances, the atmosphere and everything like that, all of the fans singing constantly, standing there and singing and chanting the whole time. You're not going to get that. And, you know, they're already both filthy rich now. So, you know, you'd hope maybe they would do that. But I don't know, though. You know, if you're looking at double the money, maybe you just like, you know what? Like, we just can't turn that down, you know?
Yeah.
An extra 10 or 20 million is an extra 10 or 20 million. You know, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
So it just depends on the difference, I guess. But, you know, Eddie Hearn said it in interviews I've seen in IFL. Like, he said he even looked at trying to bring Canelo one time to the UK. And he's like, it's just not feasable, you know?
Yeah, because they can't pay.
Money. Yeah.
Yeah, they can't pay. Yeah. I mean, I could see, honestly, Canelo eventually. He said he wants to fight five more years. He said that already multiple times. I mean, he fought in Mexico. He's fought in the United States, obviously, a bunch of times. I can see him going to the UK eventually. In the next 5 years, I mean, think about it. He could literally fight anybody over there. You know, like he'll try to find some type of opponent, but that fight will be a spectacle because the UK fans and the fans over there will be like, this is going to be the only time we're ever going to see him in person. Just like Lomachenko when he went over there.
Second.
Canelo?
He fought Matthew Hatton.
Out there? Mm-hmm. Oh, he did? Oh, I thought that fight was in the United States.
I think he was out there.
Are you sure?
Let me check. You keep on talking, Daniel.
Well, I'm pretty sure that was here.
You think so?
Well, I'd be very surprised if that was over there because all these years I've always felt that these fights were here.
I think it was in the round the corner, Honda Center.
In Anaheim, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. See, I knew it. I was like, no, there's no way he's from the UK because, like, that's something. Yeah. So, see, that even adds more credence to him fighting in the UK in the next 5 years, you know, because I mean, let's just face it. He is running out of opponents, like credible opponents between 168, 175, essentially. And then he obviously probably wants, it seems like he wants to stay at 168, but he can go to the UK and fight a lesser name in a sense, opponent wise, but he'll sell out a stadium because people were like, oh, Canelo will sell it on his own. You know, whereas over here in Vegas, especially, like, you know, Canelo can still sell based on his name, but, you know, you need a dance partner. You need a dance partner, especially if your events are always in the same spot out here in Las Vegas. You know, people are going to be like, ah, I don't really want to go to that fight. I've already went to his fights before, and I don't really like that opponent. In the UK, he wouldn't really need that because people would just show up just to see him.
It's crazy, though, isn't it, that Eddie Hearn even admits that he's looked at bringing Canelo to the UK, and even with selling out somewhere like Wembley Stadium, they can't generate the money that he would get over here.
That's nuts, huh?
Well, you wouldn't get anywhere near, maybe in Dallas or something like that, like 80,000-90,000 people. Even with that ticket money, he's not going to get the same.
Yeah.
The pay-per-views are just treble the price over here.
Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, the economy, like when he fought in Mexico, he had to take a pay cut, but he wanted to take a pay cut because he wanted to bring a fight over there to his hometown.
Pay-per-views are free over there, thanks to him.
His
pay-per-views.
Yeah, so he had to take a pay cut. I mean, Eddie Hearn said that in interviews, like when he said Canelo was like, oh, I want to fight in Mexico. And Eddie Hearn told him like, okay, he's like, we'll do it. We can do it. But like, you know, like the money's going to be tight. We're not gonna be able to pay you, you know, your required purse. And he was cool with it. You know, I think Eddie Hearn said, he's like, yeah, he took a pay cut because he wanted to bring a fight to Mexico. So, yeah, I mean, I could see him going to the UK, man. I could see it. You know, like I said, and, you know, there was rumor of Tank Davis, you know, they were throwing it out, fillers, or to his next fight might be in the UK. And now they're saying Frank Barton, but that fight hasn't even been announced yet. So I don't even think that that's finalized. You know, I think they're still trying to figure it out because people weren't, you know, Frank Martin's a good fighter and it'd be an interesting, intriguing fight, but I don't think PBC has really gotten the publicity and the attention after people kind of reported that saying, oh, Tank Davis and Frank Martin are in negotiations. I mean, people really haven't responded to it. It's like saying like, oh, this is huge. They haven't got that response. And they want Tank Davis to, after coming off his most successful event against Ryan Garcia, they're trying to keep him on that momentum train, but he needs a dance partner. And I don't think Frank Martin is a dance partner, you know?
No.
So, yeah, like I said, Canelo, going back to the dance partner thing, if he goes to the UK in the next couple of years, the dance partner wouldn't matter because Canelo would be the one selling.
I could see him in there with Chris Eubank Jr.
You know what? I can see that. Yeah, they're talking about Eubank Crawford. I don't know. We'll touch on that at the end. But moving on to the co-main event of this event in Saudi Arabia, Joseph Parker, 35-3, gets the majority decision win over Zhile Zhang, who takes the second loss of his career. The judges had the fight 113-113, 114-112, and 115-111. The two cards in Parker's favor. Hey. You didn't have the confidence in Parker. What happened?
Kind of like, you know, listeners to the show have been listening for a while, kind of like with Josh Warrington. I always kind of like backed against him as well, but he would always come out on top. And the same thing with Parker in his last fight against Wilder. Obviously, this fight against Zhile Zhang, but I think he was just father time, wasn't it? You know, Zhile Zhang started off very well. Obviously, Parker was dropped twice during the fight, but Zhang just didn't have the gas tank anymore. You know, he's like 40 years old, you know, super big, heavy guy. And I think just the old lactic acid just kind of, you know, caught up with him. He just didn't have the stamina anymore. I think he should have really have tried to jump on Parker, you know, after the, you know, knocking him down, you know, once and twice, and then try to get him out of there. But yeah, just good game plan from Parker. He obviously won the rounds. I think he looks pretty good, doesn't he, under Andy Lee? Ever since coming to Andy Lee as a coach, he just seems to have very good game plans. Because
so did he you win? Know, you
look
over
at this now? Fight and like the he's Wilder fight. You, over. You know, but look at me. He's another one. Like Joshua, I think he's was it 4-0 or 5-0 since losing the fight. Pardon me to Joe Joyce. Activity.
Same yeah, he's been active. Joshua. He's been active.
Yeah, so it just shows what he's done. And then obviously getting in there with Andy Lee, constant sparring, and obviously being pretty much his camp and Tyson Fury's camp are pretty much always together. Being surrounded by people like Tyson Fury and Andy Lee is only going to be good for you. And even though he gets in there and he's obviously like a lot smaller in terms of a heavyweight in stature and stuff like that, he kind of uses, kind of like Usyk, does, you know, gets in, gets out, you know, very well so far. And, you know, I thought he was going to be too static. I thought he was going to be very similar to the Joe Joyce performance because Joe Joyce is kind of like similar to Zhang. They don't really have much of a defense. They're both just fucking huge.
Yeah.
Kind of like grind you down. But Zhang doesn't have the tank that Joe Joyce does, where Joe Joyce just keeps throwing and kind of like Homer Simpson, you hit him, but it doesn't affect him and he just grinds you down. And that's what he managed to do against Parker. But obviously Zhang couldn't because he's older, doesn't have the gas tank. So, yeah, good performance from Joe Parker, and I probably just have to give him some credit now, right?
So he's won you over? Are you on the bandwagon now?
Well, you know, we'll see. We'll see.
Not yet. Even after this, not yet.
Yeah, I'm stubborn.
Not yet. Yeah, I mean, yeah, his back-to-back wins over Deontay Wilder, which he was not the favorite, and then now defeating Zhile Zhang. You know, arguably two of the hardest punchers, if not the hardest punchers in the heavyweight division in terms of knockouts. You know, Parker's had consecutive wins over them. two of the most feared punchers in the division. So this win also gave Parker the interim, which really doesn't count, but I guess it counts, WBO heavyweight title that Zhang had. And Parker did say that there is a rematch clause in the contract. So Zhang has to exercise it, which probably he probably will. I mean, I don't see why not.
Yeah, why wouldn't you?
Yeah, especially with, you know, another payday. Why not? So he's already older.
I mean, the chance of WBO interim, you would think, after the Fury-Usyk fight, are they going to be able to, you know, push that and say, hey, I want a shot at the WBO, so.
Yeah, right now that's got the gold mine, so that totally makes sense. So Parker, Parker and Zhang rematch happens by what? September?
Yeah, I mean, if we're going to, are they going to do, because I know obviously Ramadan just started, so obviously that takes a few months, right, for them. I don't think they'll be doing any events over in Saudi Arabia, so probably towards the end of the year, I think we'll probably see more boxing events.
Well, the next one is June, right? Fury.
Yeah, but June. So it'll be like 2 or 3 months, it seems, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, so June, yeah. You might be right, September time, yeah.
Yeah, September. Also on the card, Ray Vargas gets fights to a split draw against Nick Ball. This was for the WBC Featherweight Championship of the World. With the draw, Vargas retains his WBC Featherweight title. What'd you think about this fight?
I mean, Ball scored knockdowns in the 8th and 11th, but, you know, still didn't manage to take it home. It's kind of hard because I wanted Nick Ball to win. Being a Brit, I think he's good to watch. Good TV fighter because he's always kind of like looking for the knockout. I know a lot of the fans said it was, you know, a robbery and he should have won. And, you know, I think he probably did sneak it, but he just probably gave away too many of the early rounds, probably like 4 or 5 rounds down, and then kind of like managed to pull it back. So I had him winning. Could be a little bit biased because he's a Brit, but I'm hoping that they're going to do it again. I know Frank Warren got in the ring and pretty much said in his interview that it was a robbery. You know, hopefully, you know, Uncle Turkey turns around and says, you know what, let's do it again. You know, it wasn't the greatest fight to watch in the first few early rounds. Typical, you know, Ray Vargas fight where he kind of just uses his size and his reach to keep you at bay. But towards the end, you know, when Nick Ball was coming back, managed to drop him and it looks like he was, you know, going to come back and, you know, take the fight. It was pretty entertaining. So, yeah, I mean, I'd like to see it again. And, you know, Vargas has pretty much fought everybody in and around that weight, right? So, you know, good payday for them both again.
And Vargas has fought now for what? Top Rank, PBC, and now Matchroom?
Well, this was both, wasn't it? Frank Warren and Matchroom.
Oh, type of show. Then he just proves my point even more. Queensberry, Matchroom. So he's fought for 4 big promotional companies, the more prominent ones, right?
Yeah.
So, he's got, I mean,
good record, really, isn't it? You know, when you look at him, like,
it's just a 1 loss, 1 draw now. Like, yeah. I mean, he's obviously, yeah, very, you know, he's obviously huge. He's gigantic for the, you know, so, you know, I mean, I'm sure that's what they tell him, like, oh, just as long as you can make it away, just stay there. You know, it's, you have an advantage.
Yeah. Moved up briefly, didn't he? And then lost and came back down.
Yeah. So, yeah, I can see them rematching. I don't know. I wouldn't see why they wouldn't, you know, especially with Nick Ball being a Frank Warren guy. So Frank Warren's going to try to push it like, hey, no, let's get the rematch. Like, you know, like you have a claim to that WBC featherweight title. So let's try to get it again. So they're close. Like they're at the finish line. They just haven't crossed. Also on the card, Israel Madrimov remains undefeated at 10-0. With 1 draw as he gets the 5th round TKO stoppage over Magomed Kurbanov, who takes the 1st loss of his professional career. This was for the vacant WBA super welterweight title at 154 pounds. What'd you think about Madrimov's win?
Pretty one-sided. I think it was a good stoppage. Kurbanov just couldn't handle it, really. Madrimov pretty much in control. from the opening bell. Didn't really present much of a challenge for Madrimov. And I mean, I like him. I like his style. I like that he's good to watch. Fast feet, fast hands. But always puts on a show. As well as obviously, you know, trying to win. He's not just one of those where he plays it safe. He just has a very good style. And yeah, you know, like Matrim said, another world champion for Matrim, I guess. You know, 10 fights, WBA super welterweight champion. So, you know, he's doing pretty well, right? I'd like to see him in there with, you know, Charlo if he ever returns.
Right. I don't think that's a bet I would take, but, you know.
You still
what,
up
it, what did Dana White, president of the UFC, said a couple weeks ago or after one of the recent events, you know, Conor McGregor is obviously the biggest star over there. Like, he's crossed over into mainstream, but he's obviously sells the most tickets over there at the UFC. And Dana White was doing his press conference after one of the events, and a reporter had asked him about Conor McGregor, like, hey, when can we inspect him back? And Dana White literally said, like, you know, it's what everybody knows is happening when these fighters get, you know, they've already made so much money in their career. He was like, Conor is rich. He was like, he has so much freaking money. He was like, so, you know, it's not really at the top of his list priorities to come back into the octagon. And I, you know, I know that happens with a lot of fighters, you know, obviously in boxing as well. But, you know, with somebody like the Charlos and stuff, I know there was like family issues with, I think, Jamal. But, you know, there's a lot of fighters out there like that. Like, oh, I made a lot of money already, even though they're like in their prime or they could still produce exciting fights. They're just like, I've already made a lot of money. Why do I want to keep taking punishment? You know, and it's their right, you know, like you have to get in there and get punched in the face. And, you know, if you don't want to fight, what are you supposed to do? So
that's why when you look at it in all of the sports, you know, Canelo, Roger Federer, Djokovic.
Oh yeah, the best guys. Yeah, the best guys stay active.
Yeah, and it's just those they're
the money makers.
Anomaly. I can't even say the word. Because they make all the money, but they still have that drive and that hunger to be the best. Look at like Cristiano Ronaldo, Messi. Those guys could just go and do what the fuck they want. They made that much money.
Yeah.
But they still got that drive and determination to keep doing it. And you look at like Patrick Mahomes, you know, in the NFL. And I don't really watch baseball, but I'm sure there's hundreds of baseball people that you could name, you know, that get those fat contracts, but they're still there early for training, you know. First in, last to leave, and stuff like that.
Right.
That's the difference. That's why when you see these generational talents once in a while, because, like you say, they make that money and the hunger goes. The hunger goes. They don't train the same. They cut corners because they don't need it. They'd rather be out there just relaxing and doing other things.
Yeah. Yeah. It's nuts, man. It is nuts. Moving on to fight previews this upcoming Saturday, the 16th of March, from the Cosmopolitan in Las Vegas, Nevada, on DAZN. William Zepeda, a Golden Boy Promotions event. William Zepeda, 29-0, undefeated, goes up against Maxie Hughes, 26-6-2. This is a Golden Boy versus Matchroom main event. What do you think about this fight? I think it's a pretty good matchup. I mean, I think Zepeda is obviously the favorite, but I think it's a pretty good matchup.
Yeah, no, it's a good matchup. Maxie Hughes, kind of one of those guys that you probably see him in there, you know, what is it, back in 2022 when he fought Kid Galahad. Everyone was like, oh, you know, Kid Galahad's going to school him. You know, Maxie Hughes isn't up to that type of standard. He gets a majority decision and the IBO, you know, title when he fights Kid Galahad. Then goes on, fights George Kambosos July last year. Beats Kambosos should have beaten him, didn't beat him on the scorecards, but I think pretty much 90% of the people who watched the fight thought that he beat and schooled Kambosos. You could see how angry Lou DiBella was, you know, after that. And then he goes on to get this, you know, big fight against William Zepeda. William Zepeda, good fighter, you know, beat like, you know, Jojo Diaz, I think last year. Goes in there, hard working, throws tons and tons and tons of punches. Great to watch. It's going to be a real clash of styles, you know, when you get in there, because Maxie's kind of slower, always seems to work to a very, very good game plan. I think he's always very disciplined and kind of, you know, turned his career around, you know, ever since linking up with, you know, Josh Warrington's crew and his dad. But I think this is probably going to be a step too far. I think Williams Appel is just going to be too big, too strong, outworks him, and I think...
Stoppage?
Yeah, that's what I'm going to go for. I think Zepeda in 10.
I think I agree with that.
Yeah, I think he's just...
Zepeda's... I think it should be a fun fight, though. Like I said, I think it's a fun fight.
Yeah, because Zepeda, not only does he work so hard and throw so much, he looks like he's kind of like heavy-handed at times as well. Like, you know, he can stop you if he kind of wants to, and he's just... I don't know what you do when you get in with someone like that. And I think people from the outside think he's, you know, he's kind of basic. But when they're throwing God knows how many punches per round, it's hard. You know, you don't get time to throw. You don't get time to do anything. You're constantly probably just wasting energy thinking about covering up and moving away and getting away from him. So I think he just kind of like wears you down. And that's why I think, you know, Zepeda, I think round 10 probably stops him.
I can see that. Yeah, I think I agree with that. And Zepeda, assuming he gets the win, he becomes 30-0. I mean, how long before he gets one of those big marquee opponents? You know?
How long have we been saying that?
I mean, he is a high risk, low reward
100% fighter
right now.
It's a mandatory, isn't it? You're never gonna turn around and say, you know what, I'm just gonna give William Zepeda a shot at my world title. Absolutely
right.
Not. Absolutely. And then looking at Maxi Hughes, you've got to think, he ended up coming over to America, fought Judge Kambosos. Now he's fighting in Vegas in a main event where, if you rewind back in 2018, he's getting knocked out by Sam Bowen. 2019,
yeah.
He's losing a unanimous decision to Liam Walsh. And these are for like British and European level fights. And now look at him. Win, lose or draw on Saturday, Maxi Hughes is the winner.
That's nuts, huh?
If you think about it, as a Brit, to have your name in lights in Las Vegas, he's winning. He's winning in life.
Where's he from exactly?
Well, that's a good question. I'm not too sure where he's from. Like, born, fights out of Rossington, Yorkshire. So I think that's Leeds area.
Yeah. Man. But yeah, like I said, I'm intrigued by this fight. You know, and I think Hughes comes to fight. I mean, if you had a better percentage, what do you think he pulls off the upset?
Because he's done it before against tricky customers like Kid Galahad, I'm going to go like 60-40 obviously in favor of Zepeda, because I picked Zepeda.
That's more than I thought. So 40%. Yeah.
I give him a 40% chance because he seems to be very disciplined. You know, when they decide, like, okay, this is how we're going to negate whatever their opponent does, he manages to stick to it, and he just grinds and he grinds and he grinds. And Zepeda's kind of probably very basic in terms of he comes out and just throws a fucking shit ton of punches. But what do you do to stop that? Pressure? I guess you could just sit on his chest and just pressure. But he's also pretty big, he's pretty strong, and he kind of hits hard. It's not like he throws a lot of punches, but they're all weak, you know, where you can just kind of like take them and come in and, you know, put pressure on him. So, yeah, it's hard. And, you know, I think we've been saying for a while, you know, how many more fights does Zepeda have to win before, you know, he gets a shot at the big time? Because if you look at it, he's 29-0, 25 knockouts.
Right. Yeah. That's nuts, man. That's nuts. So... like you said, it's highly likely that this fight ends in a knockout or a stoppage, especially within 10 rounds. I'm on board with that.
I've always wondered why they call him, isn't Camarón in Spanish shrimp?
It is. Yeah. Do you remember the other guy who used to fight for Golden Boy? His nickname was El Camarón. I think he retired, but because he had a couple losses, but he was a part of like that young stable. I think his last fight was at the StubHub Center in Carson, California. What's his name? He had that nickname, and I know like other fighters have had it, but like he's the last one that I remember Golden Boy having on, you know, with that before Zepeda came along.
What in Spanish is that, like a nickname? Like, why shrimp?
Oh, I don't. That's a good question. I don't know. I've never really like looked into it. Maybe. That's a good question. Actually, let me look that up right now. I've never actually looked into that. I do wonder what that means. I mean, because it is shrimp.
Is it like, is that the youngest kid or something? Like, is it like he's the shrimp of the family? Or like,
I mean, you could say that if you kind of wanted to twist the definition, but I don't think that would be it. I mean, there has to be like a name like that in, you know, in the UK, right? Like with a nickname, there has to be something that's kind of similar.
Yeah, once we find out the definition, I'm sure it'll probably make sense, right? In English.
Let's see. I'm trying to see. I'm on his Wikipedia page. See if I can find it. What do you think? Do you have a guess? I'm looking for it still, but do you have a guess?
I think it's that. Like, he's the shrimp of the family. Like, he's the youngest or something. Like, he's the youngest child. And that's where the nickname comes from. But that's just a wild guess. I have no idea.
I don't think there's anything on here. No, they don't even really mention his nickname.
We'll find out and we'll have it next week for the review show.
Yeah, because that is a good question. I mean, sometimes, you know, you hear these nicknames and you just hear them and you're just like, oh, I don't. Like, because, you know, sometimes you, like, for example, Juan Manuel Marquez, his nickname in Spanish is Dinamita, which means dynamite. So that's pretty easy to understand, right?
Yeah.
Dynamite punches. You have dynamite in your hands. You know, it's something like that. You know, Eric Morales, his nickname was El Terrible, which means like the terrible. But I don't think they were trying to say like, oh, he's terrible at fighting. It was just more like, oh, he's the terrible Eric Morales.
Yeah,
like
he's terrible to fight because he's just a whole.
Yeah, yeah. Or the terrible Eric Morales, like the scary name or something. Yeah, I mean, I they have it listed in certain places, nickname Camarón. You know what? That's a really good question because I'm not exactly sure what it means. Because other fighters have had it, and I'm sure it's like it's really easy to understand. But
because according to this, so in Spanish, it's a nickname because they're blonde and fair skinned.
You know what? That makes sense. I was thinking like reddish, but. He is blonde and, you know, he's light skinned and he's Mexican. And the fighter I was trying to think of the name earlier that was with Golden Boy, his nickname was El Camarón. He was also a light skinned Mexican gentleman. So honestly, that makes sense. You know, I was thinking more deeper when you posed that question. I was thinking like, it can't be that easy. I was thinking that it was a deeper meaning. So I guess I'm wrong.
Google to the rescue.
Yeah, yeah. It was right in front of my face the entire time. And also on that card, Floyd Schofield, who's been on the show here at the Last Round in the past, returns to the ring at 16-0 as he goes up against Esturi Suero. I think I said that right. 13-1. Obviously, they're still developing Schofield. You know, he did have some back and forth chirping on Twitter with who did he have it with? You remember that recently?
Jojo Diaz, Keyshawn Davis.
I think it was Davis who I was thinking about. What's the likelihood that if Schofield wins? You know, I think Jojo Diaz is at that level where he's kind of just a B-side opponent. As
just announced his next fight, Oscar Duarte.
Is it official?
According to Jojo, yeah, he said that.
Well, you know how these fighters are. Sometimes they'll say that it is, but it doesn't end up happening.
He just lost to that random dude, and then Oscar Duarte lost to Ryan Garcia.
I mean, I think that's an interesting fight. That is, I'm not mad at it. I think that's a pretty fun fight. But would you rather see Schofield versus Jojo versus Duarte, or Duarte versus Schofield?
I think I'd rather actually see Schofield and Jojo.
I think so too, because we get a better barometer for Schofield.
Exactly. Yeah, and he's interesting. He's been on the show. I like his style. I think he's got a high ceiling as well. If matched right and moved correctly, which he seems to have done so far, I think he's going about things the right way. And Golden Boy, you know, they match people hard, but when they get to the top, they're ready.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. When their fighters get to the top, I mean, obviously it's hard.
Yeah.
You know, but when they get to the top, their fighters are usually like very well prepared. So you got to give them that. Top Rank's the same. Top Rank's the same way. You know, so you got to give it to them. But yeah, Golden Boy's pretty good at that. That's what I mean. You know, they take the risks, and sometimes their fighters lose early or, you know, but yeah, when the ones that do make it, you know, you can't knock their preparation. Also, this upcoming weekend from the Resorts World Arena. So this is Resorts World. Is this new in Birmingham, England? So this is the same Resorts World as the Resorts World Casino and Hotel in Las Vegas, right?
I was wondering the same thing. Never really had fights there.
But I mean, it's the same name.
Yeah, I would assume it's a chain.
Is this like a naming rights thing? Was this another arena before? What was the arena before?
I honestly don't know. I don't know whether it's the Birmingham arena that was there before. And it's just like a naming rights that just sponsoring it. Or is it like a new arena that's like a casino / hotel? Like over here? I honestly don't know.
That's interesting though. Because that's the first time I've heard about it. So I'm assuming it's new. So maybe our listeners in the UK could let us know. But it seems like this is a brand new one. And it's probably the same owners as the Resorts World Hotel Casino in Las Vegas. Headlined by Joe Joyce. Heavyweight, who we just talked about earlier when he's lost to Zhilei Zhang. A couple of years ago, I think, in his career. Was it last year? 15-2 goes up against Cash Ali. 21-2. What do you think about this matchup?
Good comeback fight for Joe Joyce. You know, he should really beat someone like Cash Ali. Cash Ali probably claimed to fame was when he bit, was it Price? Big Pricey?
David Price?
Yeah, and he got banned for pulling a Mike Tyson.
Man.
Who we will be speaking about later.
It's coming.
Yeah, good. I think it's an easy comeback win for Joe Joyce. If Joe Joyce doesn't get Cash Ali out of there, then I think he should seriously look at retirement.
Oof. The dreaded word, huh? The dreaded word.
Especially with when you look at someone like Joe Joyce, he's got to get himself back into the win column because look at all the money that's flying around the heavyweight division right now.
Yeah, it's true. That's right. And look at Parker as an example, you know, yeah. Having a couple losses. You know, he's been active, gets more wins, and arguably has had the two biggest wins of his career in the last two fights against Wilder and Zhang.
And he smoked Parker.
That's true. Yeah, that's right. One of Parker's three losses is from Joe Joyce. Yeah, that's true. That's true. So, yeah, I think Joe Joyce is trying to get back up to that level again so he can at least get maybe one or two decent paydays against one of the big guys. You know, makes sense. Definitely makes sense. Also on the card, Nathan Heaney, 18-0, goes up against Brad Pauls, 18-1 for the British Middleweight Championship. What do you think about this fight?
Another one kind of similar to like Maxie Hughes, who, you know, Nathan Deeney hits the scene, kind of well known for his entrances because he kind of had the following of the Stoke City fans, and, you know, his entrances were all over like social media because all of the fans were coming in, and, you know, he sold a crazy amount of tickets, picked up by Frank Warren, matched well. I think a lot of people thought, you know, the British title is pretty much his world title because of his ability. fucking managed to do it, picked it up, and then now here he is again in a big fight against Brad Pauls. So, you know, all respect to, you know, Nathan Heaney. And after his last performance against Denzel Bentley, I think I'm going to go for a Nathan Heaney win. I think he managed to actually get a victory here against, you know, a tough opponent in Brad Pauls. But I'm sure with Nathan Heaney there, it's going to be a pretty sold-out arena with some decent fans, lots of singing and all the stuff that's missing when we watch the fights in Saudi Arabia, to be honest, like we spoke about earlier.
Also on the card, Dennis McCann, 14-0-1, goes up against Brad Strand. Another Brad on the card, 11-0 for the vacant WBO Intercontinental Super Bantamweight title. What a mouthful that is. What do you think about this fight?
Being a big fan of, obviously, Dennis McCann, I'd like to see a good victory for him. I'm not really too sure what he's kind of been doing. He looked like he left his training camp, came out to America for a bit, was training with Hamza Shahrazz and Ricky Funes over in Van Nuys, California. Not too far away from me and Danny. And then he's gone back to the UK. So I'm hoping that kind of doesn't really affect his performances, you know, in this kind of fight, because he kind of really still needs to be moving on. You know, he's, what, 15 fights in? This is going to be his 16th fight this weekend. So I think he just kind of needs to, like, settle down, pick where he wants to fight, like, in terms of a coach, and then kind of just go from there, because I think he's got all of the ability if he can just kind of find a coach which he likes and, you know, likes the game plan and everything like that, and then just kind of put that all together, because you don't want to kind of get lost and just start going from coach to coach and you don't really know if you're coming or going, because I think he's a really good talent. You know, you watch him in the ring, he's super good to watch. He's like a made-for-TV type of fighter. And, you know, but how many times have we seen, you know, just people's careers just go down the drain because they keep, you know, making silly decisions and stuff outside of the ring starts to affect their performances in the ring. You know, hopefully he doesn't kind of go down that path. And, you know, we're talking about him years from now on, you know, how much of a talent was wasted and, you know, how much, you know, he looked like he was going to be a world champion but didn't make it.
We would come back to this specific episode years from now if that happens.
Exactly.
And we'll reference it. News and notes section of this week's episode of the Last Round Podcast. It's that time of year again. The Nevada Boxing Hall of Fame, NVBHOF, that acronym that you've seen around the boxing circles. Their induction weekend for the class of 2023 and 2024 obviously has been announced, with the inductees for 2023 including Zab Judah, Casa Zoo, Jorge Arce, Rafael Marquez, Michael Moore, Donald Curry, Marvin Kamel, Lamont Brewster, Gennaro Hernandez, Emil Griffith, and then non-boxers, Jacob Stitch Duran, Jesse Reed, Mitch Halpern, and then for 2024, Sean Porter. Sean Porter's included there, Las Vegas native right there. Ishae Smith, Layla McCarter, and also Jay Nady, former referee, Marco Martino. The event is scheduled to take place on August 9th and 10th of this year, 2024, at the Orleans Hotel and Casino. What do you think about those names that I listed being inducted?
Lots of good names. I think Sean Porter only recently just retired, so you'd have thought they'd have waited a little bit before, you know, throwing him in there. But
He could always come back. What do you know? Is that really breaking a rule? Like, hey, you went back and fought. We're taking away your induction.
Right, exactly. Just imagine how many times that would happen in boxing, the amount of times that people retire and reappear and stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
good. You know, they always seem to do a good event. Obviously, we know the Anthony Saldana, who kind of like runs it and does a lot of the work over there. So yeah, if anyone's in Vegas in and around that time, be sure to attend. You can buy tickets to go. I think there's a dinner and stuff like that you can go to.
Yeah, August. So right in the smack dab, towards the end of summer, but it'll still be a pool season and Vegas will still be pretty active in terms of traffic. So check that out. And then, like you touched on earlier, Mike Tyson, double mics right there, is returning to the ring We're not sure if this is an exhibition or a full fight or not. We've heard some rumors that their headgear might be involved, but we're not sure yet. We'll return to the ring to face Jake Paul, out of all people, you know, which is, we shouldn't be surprised, in a boxing match on July 20th at AT&T Stadium in Arlington, Texas, which is just outside of Dallas, Texas, where the Dallas Cowboys play for the NFL here in the United States. This is the first boxing card, you know, if you want to call it that, that will air on Netflix. So this is a deal with Netflix. You know, they've already all announced it. Jake Paul announced it. Mike Tyson announced it. Netflix announced it. Jake Paul's Most Valuable Promotions, MVP, did the deal with Netflix. And, I mean, you know, regardless of what people think about the matchup, I don't even think the news is Tyson Paul. It's Netflix doing a live event, because they've been messing with some live content here and there. They did, I think, a comedy special, maybe a couple, maybe less than two or three, where they did those live. And I think they did something else that was live as well. This is, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, but if you know, I believe this is their first live event in regards to any type of sport.
I think, as far as I know, that's correct.
Right? So this is huge. This is huge, you know? So, I mean, I don't think Netflix will jump in, you know, unless they can probably get, you know, those NFL rights in the future, or like even baseball, basketball, you know, lucrative ongoing rights like that.
Raw, don't forget they got wrestling.
That's, you know what? That's, I forgot about that. That's true. They signed a deal to get Monday Night Raw from the WWE, and obviously their TKO parent company, I think beginning at the start of 2025, it's going to move to Netflix, which that's a huge deal. And you know, WWE, if you look at their timeline, they jumped into the streaming game like 10 years ago. You know, they created their own network. You know, there were still Netflix and all these other ones, but it wasn't as popular as it is now, you know, in the last maybe 7, 8 years, 6 years or something. Streaming has just blown up and still continues to increase and increase and increase, at least in comparison to traditional cable and satellite. And now Netflix jumping into it, you know, it was already a big deal when they did live content by getting Monday Night Raw for the WWE. That's huge already. And now they're showing, hey, look, we're going to air this. So, you know, maybe, you know, I don't think Netflix is going to jump into any type of boxing anytime soon. Because, you know, just because boxing is not financially sexy, if that's the right definition to say, for these broadcasters, just because of the slim, if any, profit margins that there are. But this is huge, man. This is huge because Netflix is involved. They're the ones putting it on. And just think about, you know, assuming they get what? AT&T Stadium holds 100,000 people, you know, 90 to 100,000 people. And if they sell, what, 50, 60,000 seats, I think that's pretty good. Netflix is the number one streamer in the world, in the United States, for sure. And they're going to, you know, they're going to promote this event leading up to July 20th, especially like that month. People log into Netflix, they're going to see it. Boom, 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 boom. And it's free. As long as you have a Netflix subscription, you can watch it. I mean, who's really... People hate on Jake Paul, and, you know, I know he just had a boxing match in Puerto Rico and, you know, all that stuff. He didn't really fight a name, but he's been staying active. He has over 10 fights now that have counted as professional fights. I mean, can you really criticize the guy? Look at what he's doing. I think any other fighter, any professional fighter, like legitimate professional fighter in boxing or MMA, would love to be in this position, right?
Well, yeah, just if you look at what Tyson and Roy Jones Jr. did, I think that did like, wasn't it reported like 1.5 million in pay-per-views or something like that?
That was also like during the middle of the pandemic though. So people were starving for content.
Yeah. So it's,
it was like perfect timing.
It's going to be interesting to see what it does, because I think a lot of people will just buy it regardless because of Tyson's in there. Hoping that he's got like one or two rounds left in him. It'll be the same sort of thing. You know, they'll show Tyson like on the bag looking like amazing. And then, you know, I'm sure they'll put pictures of him looking all ripped and stuff like that. So they'll try to sell it the best they can. And I'm sure Jake and Tyson will probably meet somewhere and they'll have like some type of argument. And, you know, all the WWE style type of selling things will be out. So it's just going to be interesting to see what type of audience it brings, bringing obviously Tyson and the old school, you know, he's still got one round left in him type of fans. And then these newer kind of YouTube, social media age people that kind of follow Jake. You know, I mean, if it cracks a million, you know, I suppose I was going to say a million buys, but it's not pay-per-view, is it?
Well, so, I say it's not pay-per-view, but like,
yeah,
depending on how many people watch it, if Netflix is proud enough of the number that they get in terms of streaming, even if there's people who just tune in, like they'll count them, be like, this is how many people tuned in. You know, they can leave it vague like that in the wording, because you could tune in for like 5 minutes and then be like, oh, and then turn it off. But they'll count you as a statistic.
I wonder, you know, if they do commercials for the first time.
You know what? I think they're going to have sponsorships. I'm sure they will. I think they're going to have sponsorships, but that's true. Like, are they going to have commercials in the middle, or are they going to have stuff in between the fights? Because there's a lot of downtime in boxing fights, you know?
Because they're that big already, you wouldn't have thought, like, say, like DAZN threw money at these fights because they're going to get new subscribers.
Right.
They've been around for so long, I don't see them getting a huge influx of people that have never heard of Netflix and don't own Netflix. Like, everyone has it. It's super cheap.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You're that's why that,
the way
they're the biggest one.
Yeah. I mean, and I'm sure there's going to be a whole host of like shoulder programming, like the equivalent of like All Access.
I think that'd be interesting. You know, and if they jump in like that, you got to give them credit. I mean, Netflix is the king, you know. Like, they are the king right now in terms of, like, any type of content, TV and stuff like that. You know, they've taken over. So, and for Jake Paul to, and Mike Tyson for that matter, mostly for Jake Paul, since he's kind of like the younger guy and he wants to be a serious boxer, to be the first one to make that crossover from the boxing side, you know, whether people agree with it or not, that's huge, man. That's huge. So, and like you said, they did a deal with WWE starting next year. So, yeah, let's see, man. But I think Netflix is like slowly showing their cards here, and they're like, "All right, we're coming." So, yeah, this is huge, man. This is huge. So, this is a big deal. And then also after, you know, 2-3 weeks of back and forth and between PBC, Canelo Alvarez, DAZN, then Gold, like not even Golden Boy, Matchroom, Eddie Hearn, you know, whatever, all the stuff that was reported and everything. Canelo Alvarez and Jaime Munguia have finalized and officially announced a fight for the 4th of May at the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, Nevada, for Alvarez's undisputed super middleweight championship of the world. So this fight is being... The lead promoter in this, or the lead, I guess you want to call it promoter, is PBC, Premier Boxing Champions. Canelo Alvarez returned to the table with Al Haymon and I guess made a deal with them. But this is an event that will be on Amazon Prime Video. And PBC is the lead. And I believe Amazon Prime Video is the lead. But since Jaime Munguia is a DAZN fighter, DAZN is also involved. So this is like a joint venture, I think, in terms of pay-per-view. You know, obviously a lot of people are surprised that Canelo Alvarez went back, and then it just, you know, when he left Al Haymon and PBC, then I guess some stuff happened in between. I think I said in one of our past episodes the last couple of weeks, I think that, and I think I said it on the show with the Coast to Coast Combat Hour this week, that, you know, how likely do you think that maybe Amazon went to Al Haymon and said, hey, what happened? How come you lost the biggest moneymaker? You know, like when we signed the deal with you guys, with your company, we thought we were going to have him for two more fights on our platform. You know, is it possible that happened? Or maybe PBC was just like, oh, you know, they found some funds to make the fight because they got him back. They got him back. And, you know, the hardcore section of boxing Twitter just going back and forth between the allegiances between promoters and fans. It's just like, oh man, it never ends. But Canelo Alvarez returns with PBC and Al Haymon, and this is a joint venture between Amazon Prime Video and DAZN on pay-per-view. Golden Boy Promotions has tweeted out something, and so has Oscar De La Hoya, since they are like a, you know, the big promoter, a partnership promoter with Jaime Munguia. But who knows if they're like actually legitimately involved, or they're just gonna be in the shadows and get a cut of the event, you know, a partial. But I don't think they're really gonna be involved, right? Especially with Canelo Alvarez's, you know, disdain and, you know.
I think the poster shows PBC and Canelo Promotions.
Yeah, it showed PBC and Canelo Promotions. So I mean, which is smart, you know. You got to give it to Canelo Alvarez. Like, think about it. And they said that this is reportedly just a one fight deal. So, you know, I mean, you got to give it to him. Like, regardless of how you look at any situation here, where people who were cheering the fact that Canelo left PBC and Al Haymon, you know, the three fight deal is invalidated. And then a week later he returns and Al Haymon secures a deal with him. And then, you know, those fans who have an allegiance to that other side, you know, get happy and all that. Regardless of how you want to look at it, on one side or the other, Canelo Alvarez is the winner here, right? Like, he's the kingmaker, you know? Like, he left. He's like, okay, you know, and then he had probably all these offers from maybe DAZN and whoever. And obviously, Al Haymon reached back out, or they got in contact again. And Canelo Alvarez got what he wanted, you know?
Because they're paying all that money for two fighters they don't have.
Right. This is a one-fight deal.
Munguia is essentially a Zanfer and Golden Boy. And Canelo's a one-fight deal.
Yeah. So, you know, like, but, you know, their backs were against the wall. You know, from a business perspective, especially, you know, your partnership's just starting with this new broadcaster. You're trying to produce results for them, you know? So they're like, hey, you know, we'll take the risk for this one fight deal, even if Canelo doesn't come back. You know, what are you supposed to do? It's a business, right? I mean, your back's against the wall, you know, and your first event hasn't even happened on that broadcaster yet. So yeah, like, and obviously PBC's hope was to have all PBC fighters in Canelo's three fight deal, and you know, that didn't happen. You know, he was supposed to reportedly fight Jermall Charlo last year, but then that fell through, and then he fought the smaller Charlo and Jermall Charlo, and that fight didn't live up to the expectation. I mean, Canelo won that fight with ease. So there was no hunger to fight the brother in May, Jermall Charlo, even though that's the fight that, you know, Al Haymon wanted. But reportedly, and then also reportedly Canelo Alvarez didn't want that fight. And then Munguia's name was thrown around in there. And, you know, I'm sure just like any promoter would, like, ah, well, Munguia's not, you know, he's not on our team, you know, like, but that's probably why Canelo couldn't make a deal. And they had to let him go out of the agreement. And then he came back. Cause I think, you know, PBC and Al Haymon realized, like, you know what, we got to figure this out. Like, okay, we'll do a one fight deal, you know. Canelo Alvarez is the kingmaker here, man. You know, he had all these promoters and broadcasters you know, he's the cash cow. He had them all like dancing around him, and you know, it worked out for him. So regardless of how you look at it, like, oh, he left and then he came back, so this promoter won or that promoter won, Canelo Alvarez is your winner. Like, he's the one who's like, yeah, come take me to the dance. You know, I'm the prettiest girl at the dance. Come take me out. So, yeah, either way. But like I said, I've said this before. I wanted to see this fight. Two Mexicans, Mexican against Mexican. This fight is going to sell.
We won.
This fight is going to sell. I say this fight does 700,000 buys.
Yeah.
I think it does 700,000 buys.
Yeah. Hang on. Yeah. Because 750, 8 around there.
He fought Chavez. And that one, I think they announced that it did over a million buys or something. And Chavez Jr. obviously had a big name because of his dad, legacy, Mexico. That was huge. Munguia's, you know, he's been around, but obviously he doesn't have the Chavez name and, you know, he's not as known. But this is going to get so much publicity on the Mexican and Latin channels. And especially in the United States, I mean, there's a big Latino population. It's going to sell, man. I think 700,000 buys are going to do 700,000 buys. Like, it's, you know, I think it's going to be a good fight. What, you know, I think obviously Canelo's the favorite, but I'm a fan, man. I'm a fan. So let's see. So as of right now, I'm excited to see this fight. And then I'm also excited to see, you know, the first Amazon Prime event on March 30th. Like 2 weeks about, or a little over 2 weeks, and see how that goes, because then it's gonna give us a bar to measure for this next fight. So yeah, it's definitely gonna be interesting. And then also Muhammad Ali, the great Muhammad Ali, rest in peace, will be inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame of class of 2024. They announced it this week. That will be at their WrestleMania 40 event on the weekend of April 5th. In Philadelphia, which kind of makes sense. Maybe they timed it like that Rocky movie based in Philadelphia, Muhammad Ali, boxer. Ali obviously passed away in June of 2016 at the age of 74. So I do wonder who's going to induct him, because they do have people who induct. They make speeches and stuff. It could be his daughter. I don't know, but maybe it's a big celebrity. I don't know, but it's, yeah. So congratulations to his family. I'm sure they're pretty excited about that. And then Manny Pacquiao, you know, he keeps going back and forth, whatever, you know, we don't really know too much about him, but he kind of pops up out of nowhere. He may return as an active boxer, not an exhibition, as an active boxer at the age of 45, against Conor Benn. You know, they had a face-off recently. This fight might be in Saudi Arabia. So, what do you think about this? You think it happens? I think it happens.
Yeah.
And just think about if Conor Benn gets this fight, and him and Tank Davis were like reportedly trying to make a deal, and Davis even tweeted at Eddie Hearn and at Conor Benn, like, oh, let's make this fight. And obviously it didn't seem like it got made. Conor Benn fighting Pacquiao in Saudi Arabia is going to be a bigger payday. So who really came out on top here? Right?
I mean, I can see it happening just due to, I think Manny Pacquiao's come back. Obviously, you know, he's just going to be picking the biggest fights for the most money. Fighting someone, you know, like Conor's not going to be a big, I imagine they're probably going to do it at like 154 due to Pacquiao's, you know, what, 45 now?
Or 45, like I think, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, I'm sure he's probably not going to want to get down to 147. It'll be like at 150, 154, like some type of catch weight. It's looking like he's probably going to be in Saudi Arabia.
Seems like it.
But, you know, Conor still at the minute doesn't have a British boxing license, so it kind of like all makes sense, doesn't it? You know?
Yeah, it lines up.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of looking for those big fights, like against like a Eubank. Obviously, that fell through. Pacquiao. you know, Javonte Davis, who they were trying to drag up from, you know, 135, 140 just for the...
Davis seemed like he was open to it, though.
Yeah, they just didn't want the didn't want to take the money for whatever reason. Obviously, he's just super loyal to PBC, so... Yeah, I can see it. Yeah, I can see it. I can see Pacquiao coming back. Big payday, Saudi Arabia against Conor Ben.
Everybody wants a cut of the Saudi Arabian money over there, man.
We just can't stop it. You know, Tyson's coming back. Pacquiao's coming back.
It's all coming, man. It is all.
Fighting in boxing. Just never a quiet day.
Never a quiet day. Once again, guys, thank you guys for listening to this week's episode of the Last Round Podcast. Please check us out, whether you're listening on Spotify or Apple Podcast or whatever app you're using, but primarily Apple Podcasts, Spotify. Go ahead and rate us 5 stars. Help us out with that algorithm on each of the platforms. On Spotify, you click the follow button under our podcast. That helps us with the algorithm and puts us in front of more eyes in the sporting world. And, you know, obviously the bigger we get, the bigger guests we can get, because, you know, there's people out there like, oh, I don't know who these guys are. I won't come on. So that helps us, those little things. And it's free. And it's free for you guys to do that. So subscribe, follow, and rate us 5 stars. Help us out with that algorithm, please. It's free, and it takes, you know, 5-7 seconds. And it definitely helps us in the long term. But as we cross the finish line for this week's episode, Mike, go ahead and let them know where they can find us and follow us.
We are at The Last Round 12 on Instagram and Twitter. Be sure to join us next week. We'll be reviewing the Maxi Hughes-Zepeda fight and then looking forward to Dalton Smith against the other Zepeda, Jose Zepeda.
Uh-oh. Zepeda's back-to-back, huh?
Yeah, exactly. And that's going to be from the Sheffield Arena in England.
So for once again, for my co-host Michael Shepherd, I'm Danny Z. This is The Last Round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is The Last Round Podcast.